Back when I was in college, I won't say how long ago, a friend of mine introduced me to a really cool show. It was called 24. If you remember, it was out in the early 2000s. And it was a TV show that followed the character of Jack Bauer, who worked for a government agency known as the Counterterrorism Unit. And each season followed the story as a terrorist attack would come upon America, and he was tasked with countering it, stopping it, making sure it actually didn't happen. The story continues, and he is left with making certain decisions throughout the show on how to resolve the attack. And sometimes to the decisions he has to make, he has to decide whether or not he's going to follow orders or do what he thinks is best to stop the attack. Then enter in a friend of his, an employee, a fellow worker by the name of Chloe O'Brien. She works with the computers, so making sure satellites are working and communication is proper. And a lot of times he would rope her into these decisions that he would make that would violate her orders. And so she was left with a task of deciding, well, do I follow what the President of the United States of America tells me to do, or should I listen to Jack and help him stop the terrorists? Now, some of us might be saying to ourselves, just listen to the President. I mean, it's the President. You don't disobey the President. But a lot of times, her loyalty, her friendship to Jack was tested because she was told one thing, but yet she wanted to remain loyal and true to her friend who she knew was going to do what needed to be done. And that brings us to our core passage for this week. It comes from Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 to 24. It says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." One question as we unpack this passage here this morning that I want you guys to think about is, where does your loyalty truly lie? And as we unpack this passage, it will, at first glance, it sounds pretty easy, pretty simple. But the more and more that we unpack it, the more difficult it becomes. And this idea of serving two masters, where does your loyalty lie? Who are you going to serve? It was nothing new. Go all the way back to the beginning. Satan, in the garden, he said, "Did God really say? Are you really going to listen to God? You can choose for yourself. You can be your own master. You can make your own decisions." And fast forward, Israel and Joshua, they're getting ready to enter the land of Canaan. After the first time they attempted, they listened to those who were fearful of the enemy. Even though God said, "I'm going to be with you," they listened to themselves and they were scared and they were wandering around for 40 years in the desert. And it came time now. They were going to enter the promised land. And Joshua stands up, you know, in the famous passage, and he says, choose this day who you're going to serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And then fast forward some more time. The prophet Elijah, the famous story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal, and they built the two altars. And Elijah beforehand, he says to Israel, he says, "Hey, if the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him." then we could take any one of the prophets. What their main message was, get rid of the idols. Get rid of all the other masters, all the other people that you listen to. Follow God. Stop following yourselves. Follow God. And then we come here to Jesus. Then this Sermon on the Mount that we talked about. And Jesus uttered so many revolutionary ideas in this message that he gave about murder, saying that hate is the same as murder. Adultery, lust is the same as adultery. Revolutionizing the idea of revenge, serving, loving your neighbor, fasting, praying, like we saw last week. But then we come to this passage and he says, well, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve both God and money. Not a whole lot of crazy ideas, nothing that we haven't already heard about. But as we unpack, we'll discover that things that Jesus says later in his ministry unfolds and unpacks what he really means by you can't serve two masters. But first, two key things from this passage that Jesus wants us to be aware of. The first is to beware of what treasures you store up. Money, awards, power, popularity, clothing, food, stuff. We see as Jesus talks throughout the Gospels, he says, this is what the world chases after. This is what the world wants to acquire and store up. Popularity, fame, glory, wealth, material things. But the problem with storing up those types of treasures is that they don't last. Earthly treasures are temporary. Money, you make it, you spend it, and then it's gone. Then you have to make more money, and then you spend it. Awards, we have awards for all sorts of things. We have, in sports, there's the all-time leaders, the world records. They're continually getting broken. Any award that we get, someone else will beat it, will be better. Power and popularity, right? Every year on Time magazine or other magazines, the world's best-looking man, best-looking woman, every year there's a new person. Every year there's some new hit song or new number one movie out there. Clothing, food, stuff, it all spoils, it all fades, it all goes away. It all spoils, kind of like milk. Right? It all has a shelf life. Milk, it's got that best buy. And some of us, we don't even wait till that best buy comes. 2 days after we open it, we're done with it. Some of us, you know who you are, you'll open it. You'll give the sniff test. If it passes the sniff test, you'll swish it around, make sure there's no clumps in it. You're like, okay, it's good. Right? But eventually, one day, you'll get the milk out of the fridge. And you'll say, no, thank you. I'll go get some new milk. That's what it's like with treasures that's here on earth. And their shelf life is this life. You can't take treasures from this life to the next one. Thousands of years ago, the Egyptians, they had all these customs and their culture around burying their dead. And they had a whole religion of afterlife. And they believed that the afterlife mirrored this life. And so when they would bury their dead, they would bury their dead with stuff, with food, clothes, house stuff, combs, bowls, furniture, food. Those of you with a pet, a favorite pet, they would be buried with their favorite pet sometimes. And kings, some of the wealthiest kings, when they would be buried in their tombs, they would have some of their servants killed and buried with them so they could serve them in the afterlife. But the problem is, thousands of years later, as we have excavated burial sites and explored the pyramids, what do we find there? We find the remains of those who died long ago. But more importantly, we find all the stuff that they were buried with. They didn't take it with them. They couldn't take it with them. We can't take it with us. Jesus told a parable to talk about this. He says, talking about a rich fool. One day, there was this rich man. He had all this wealth, and he had a good crop. And he had all these goods that he couldn't hold them in his barns. And he's like, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with all this stuff that I've got? Well, okay, I'm going to tear down my barns, build bigger ones, store it in there that will house and hold all of my food and all the stuff that I need. And I'm going to say to myself, take life easy. Take a break. Eat, drink, and be merry. You don't have anything to worry about. Then God comes to him and says to him, tonight, you fool, you will die tonight. Then what will happen to all your stuff? And then Jesus ends the parable with, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. Heavenly treasure is forever. But heavenly treasure isn't physical. It isn't something that we can touch and hold on to and keep. It's intangible. You know, we can look at this Sermon on the Mount and we can see the types of heavenly treasures that we can store up for ourselves. If you look at the Beatitudes, those who are poor in spirit, the meek, the merciful, the peacemakers, giving, fasting, praying, loving your enemies, those are the things that we do that will store up treasures in heaven. 1 Timothy 6:18-19 says this, command them, the rich, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. So to contrast earthly treasures and heavenly treasures, earthly treasures is possessions, whether it's money, clothing, food, property, but heavenly treasures are other people, things like faith, hope, love, salvation, eternal life. It's service to others, caring, sharing, giving, spending time with people, caring about them above ourselves. So in other words, it's not what I do for me, but it's what do I do for other people. The second key from this passage is to beware of where you store your treasures. And at first thought, you think, well, I mean, it's easy. They go hand in hand. What and where? If I'm storing myself earthly treasures, they're going to be stored up on earth. And while that part is true, storing ourselves up heavenly treasures can be a little tricky. That's where we can get into a little trouble. See, all the passages in the Sermon on the Mount, whether it's fasting, prayer, giving to the needy, Jesus says, give in secret. He actually says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And near the end of his life, they were sitting in the temple and all the Pharisees were just dropping money left and right into the offering tray. And it was making a huge clatter. And then there was a poor widow who dropped in 2 copper coins. And Jesus said, the Pharisees, they've already received their treasure. Because they do it to get attention from people. When Jesus talked about praying, that we looked at last week, he says, don't pray with fancy words in front of everybody. He says, go into a closet, close your room. Don't make yourself look holy by the words you say when you pray. Talking about fasting, he said, don't be like the Pharisees. Don't be like the religious people who make themselves look all gloom and doom because they're skipping a meal. He says, actually, get yourself dressed up. Look right. Look happy. Look good. Because when we do those things to get praise from men, Jesus says they've received their reward. We can do heavenly treasure, heavenly things for an earthly reward. And that's where we have to be careful. But why? So why? So why do we have to beware of what and where we keep our treasures? Well, the love of earthly treasures can keep us from heaven. The love of earthly treasures can keep us from heaven. One instance, Jesus was walking around, and a rich young ruler, we know that story, he came to Jesus and he starts with the right question, right? What do I have to do to inherit eternal life? It's a great question, and that's a question we should all be asking. And Jesus, though, however, knew that there was one problem with that question. He asked, what did he have to do to inherit, to earn salvation? And he missed the point. Maybe he was absent that day. Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe he was tardy and he missed all the early points, or he slept through his alarm. But he missed that. And so Jesus is like, well, you know, you've heard the commandments. Don't lie, don't steal, don't murder, honor your father and mother. Jesus starts with the actions. Jesus starts with the human interactions. And the guy actually had the audacity to say, oh yeah, I've kept all those. I've done that. And then Jesus gets to the root of his issue. The root of his issue was he wanted a Band-Aid over a bullet wound. He wanted a list of do's and don'ts that he had to follow to get eternal life. But the problem is, it's not a list of do's and don'ts. See, the issue Jesus was getting at, he says, you lack one thing. Sell all your possessions, give the money to the poor, and follow me. See, he got to the root of the issue of, your heart is not following me. Your heart is following your treasures. So you have to get rid of whatever your heart is following so that it is free to follow me. But unfortunately for the rich young ruler, he didn't want to do that. And so he walked away sad. See, the issue isn't an issue of doing these certain things and not doing these things. The issue is, where does our heart's loyalty lie? And we won't ever be able to fix the actions before we fix the heart issue. We have to fix our heart, and then our actions will follow. So, as I said earlier, where do your loyalties lie? Where does your heart fall? I have a short clip that talks about that, that will show something about our root problem. So take a look.
This for you. Too many mind.
Too many mind?
Mind is told. Mind the people what? Mind the enemy. Too many mind. No mind.
No mind.
Thank you.
So in that video, the American, his name is Nate, he essentially got beat up over and over and over again. And the advice that the young samurai gave to him was no mind. He was too consumed with everything that was going around him. His enemy, the people watching, the sword, the ground, the weather, everything was going around him. And he told him, no mind. Essentially, rid your mind of all the other distractions. The root of our problem of following Jesus is that we have too many minds. You know, today in our culture, we are bombarded from every direction with stuff from school, jobs, family, food, sports, entertainment, social media, music. We have so many distractions around us and surrounding us. We have so many different worries and troubles and expectations. And I think it's safe to say that if we examine our lives, we, just like Nate, have too many minds. And as we unpack this passage, we will see that it is a very big problem to have. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus says, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." This is a tough passage to swallow, and we think of ways of, well, what could Jesus actually be meaning? Because he doesn't really mean hate, because he just said that hate is the same as murder, and we're supposed to love everybody and not hate anyone, right? So we try to think, well, what could he possibly mean when he says you have to hate your family and your own life to be his disciple? Well, the problem with us trying to rationalize and coming up with what does Jesus truly mean is that we can sometimes go a little too far. We say things like, well, you know, it's okay to have other things. He's not saying that you can't have a family. He's not saying that you can't have stuff. As long as you know you do the right dues, right? We go to church when we can. When I remember to pray, I'll pray. And when I remember to read my Bible, I'll read my Bible. And, you know, I think that'll be okay. Or we'll even go even further. He's like, well, you know, he doesn't mean we have to hate those things. But, you know, let's do them with 100%. Whatever we do, give 100%, give our best effort, be respectful, do our best. But in our attempts to do that, to rationalize what Jesus means, we can actually miss or even contradict what Jesus truly meant. See, you don't have to be a Christian to give 100%. You don't have to be a Christian to be respectful and to do your best. I mean, think about what boss is going to come up to you and say, just make it look like you're working. You don't have to really do anything. No, our boss at our job wants us to give 100%. Whether he's a Christian or not, whether he follows Jesus or not, he's going to expect his employees to do their job to the best of their ability. Or how about a coach? What coach would tell his players, you know what, just go 50%. That'll be good enough. No need to work hard. No, every coach that I know of would say, give 100%, go all out, do your best, be respectful to your teammates, to your coaches, whether they believe in Jesus or not. You don't have to be a Christian to do those things. And like I said earlier, yes, there's nothing wrong with sports or money or food or jobs or family. But if we think that all Jesus requires is that we go to church and then do our best, then we fall short of what Jesus is really talking about, and we're fooling ourselves. The point of Jesus' message, the point of that passage is that our love for God should make our love for everything else seem like hate. You know, you've seen the shows or the movies where the couples, they're fighting or over, and it's usually the woman, she's telling the guy, "You don't love me. Why don't you love me? You do all these things. Choose all these things over me." Right? And they're fighting about, well, our love, and you're choosing, having to choose other things. It's like, well, no, I do love you. Well, then why don't you spend time with me? Why don't you talk to me? Why don't you do this with me? You always choose other things before me. That's the kind of love that Jesus says that that's not the kind of love that Jesus says. He's saying that our love for God should make it seem like our love for other people is hate. I remember many years ago, I worked a church basketball camp for middle schoolers. And one of the speakers, he was a pastor of a church. And I remember this story that he told me, and I thought he was crazy. But he told this story of when he was in college and he met his future wife, and he knew that he wanted to marry her, hadn't asked her yet, but he told her this. He said he was going into the preaching ministry, so he was going to be a preacher. And he said, "Listen, honey, if it's a Sunday morning and I'm about to preach and you go into labor, I am going to go preach as opposed to being with you in the hospital." And he said his reasoning was because someone might hear the words that I have to say and give their life to Jesus. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. That dude's an idiot. But needless to say, no worries. They lived happily ever after. They got married. I can't remember if that actually did end up happening or not. But that is something bold to say. And a lot of us would say, "Oh, your wife's going into labor. Yeah, go. Be with your wife." Right? And if he chose to go preach a sermon instead of being with his wife in the hospital, I can see a lot of people saying, "Well, don't you love your wife?" But the point of Jesus' passage is you have to love God so much that even if you love those closest to you, it seems like hate. And that is the heart of this message. God versus anything. If we come to a choice, God or something else, we choose God. We choose God every time. Every time we're given an option, we choose God. And this is where it gets hard. If we looked at our calendars, if we looked at our schedules, would it be evident that we are choosing God? You know, some of us, we might open up, like, "Got my church morning. Check. Tuesday night Bible study. Check. I got my God stuff. I'm choosing God." Well, let's go dig a little deeper. Well, let's look at your day by day. Let's do a reality show, you know, like Survivor or one of those other reality. And let's video your everyday life. And if we examined your conversations, if we examined the things that you did, if we went even deeper, if we videoed your thoughts, would they permeate Jesus? Would your conversations, would your thoughts, ideas, beliefs, would it ooze out of you that you love Jesus? I think for a lot of us, if we were to examine our lives, our schedule, if we examine what we spend our money on, we would see and we would be convicted that maybe we don't love God as much as we thought we did. I used to be, maybe I still am, a sentimental person. And I remember when it was March of 1994, and I told my parents, I wanted to be baptized. I wanted to give my life to Jesus. And so my pastor came over, and we talked as a family. You know, being the sentimental kid that I was at the time, I was like, I want to be baptized on my birthday. That'd be so cool. That'd be so amazing. The only problem was my birthday was October 1st. It was like 6 months away, right? And so talking with it, my parents were like, "You're ready to make this decision, but you want to wait. What if Jesus comes back in between you're realizing you need to make this decision to when you actually do it?" Now, what I'm not saying is you're driving Sunday morning to church to get baptized, and you get in a car accident and you die, sorry, you missed your chance. I'm not saying that. Or you're getting ready, you're walking up, you slip, crack your head, you die before you get into the waters. I'm not saying you're going to hell if you do that. That's not what I'm saying. But I knew the decision I wanted to make. And I said, well, what if I did it on my birthday? Or for this? Or so my grandma and grandpa can come? Or so my family can see it? That's a tough decision to make. In Luke chapter 9, there's a story. A guy comes up to Jesus and says, let me follow you. I want to follow you, Jesus. And, you know, anyone who says, I want to follow Jesus, most of us would be like, all right, here's what you got to do. Let's go. Right? We've got a baptistry. Let's go. We're ready. Jesus says, foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. It's a very odd response to someone wanting to follow Jesus. Then Jesus says to another guy, he says, hey, you, come follow me. And the guy says, let me bury my father. Nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, he wants to take care of his dad, take care of funeral arrangements, take all that family stuff that he needs to do, right? And then he'll come follow Jesus. No problem, right? Unfortunately, Jesus doesn't say that. He says, let the dead bury their own dead, but you follow me. Another guy says, I want to follow you. I want to follow you, but please, let me just go say goodbye to my family. I love my family. Let me just say goodbye. Let them know that I'm coming to follow you. Jesus says, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks behind him is worthy to follow me. All of those things that happened, Jesus gave a tough response to people who wanted to follow him. But for whatever sentimental reason, they wanted to do something else first. Jesus said, no, nothing else comes first. I come first. And so our problem with too many minds is that we want to have it all, right? We want heaven, but we want the best of this world has to offer, right? We want the best of both worlds. But the problem is Jesus doesn't leave any room for that. Jesus doesn't leave us any choices. Because if we try, it'll be like in Revelation where Jesus talks to the church of Laodicea. He says, you have all this stuff, you're all these riches, but you're poor in what counts. And I wish you were either hot or cold, but you are neither. And I'm going to vomit you out of my mouth. Those are hard words for us to swallow. Now, bringing it back to Grad Sunday, when I first looked at this passage, I was like, wow, how am I going to tie this into graduation Sunday? But I think it's a very fitting and a perfect passage. As the graduates, as they go on with their next lives, whether it's to college or to work or wherever, they're going to have so many distractions to fill up their minds. They're going to be tempted to have too many minds. And just like that, we too will be tempted day in and day out to have too many minds. Now, I wouldn't say that we need to have no mind. I would change it to we need to have one mind. And that's a mind that is focused on God. And as I finish, I'll say, we don't just choose God first, we choose God always. If you haven't yet chosen God, I would encourage you, don't walk out this door before making that decision. Don't wait another day. Now is the only time that we have, that we are promised. If you have given your life to Jesus and you realize that maybe you have too many minds and you haven't been giving God your all and every, I would encourage you, start today. Don't end like the church in Laodicea. Don't be like the people who wanted to follow Jesus but walked away. as the band comes up and closes in some songs, come. Talk. Myself, Andy, one of the elders will be here. Make whatever decision that you have to make sure that when you walk out these doors, you know where you're going. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words that you have given to us. And even though they are hard and they are difficult for us to swallow, I ask that we would examine our lives and that we would soak them up. I would pray that as we leave this morning, that we would, that our lives would just resonate of you. That people would look at us and know that we serve you first and foremost and that we serve you only. God, we thank you for your Son who gave everything for us so that we might give everything to him. Amen.